Hello there, and thanks for joining me on the podcast today. Teenagers. The LGBTQ teenagers. Let's talk about them. Let's talk about this topic. This is a very complex topic and has many, many different avenues of discussion and consideration and questions. Many, many questions that need to be raised and discussed and answered. The problem is that every time you raise a question or want to talk about this topic, it brings out the anger and the disgust of so many people that it turns into an argument, it turns into a debate, it turns into a hostile debate. And the issue doesn't get resolved. The issue doesn't get better understood. The issue doesn't get its full consideration that it deserves. So let's try it. Let me provoke some of your thinking today with some issues that I'd like to raise, and then you can go ahead and discuss them among yourselves, and maybe other questions come to mind and other thoughts on this topic that you can then raise with other people. One of the purposes of a podcast is to generate discussion, to open up avenues of discussion, to create thought and to create questioning so that leads to better understanding and a full understanding of different topics. So let me do my part as we look at this question of these teenagers who for some reason or another have been labeled LGBTQ. Almost a frightening label in itself. And a label in itself that puts them off to the side. It puts them off outside of the context of their normal peer group. Puts them into an odd category. Puts them into a subsystem of the teenage world, you know, today. And then when you're in that kind of a subsystem, you're in that kind of a separate category, you're going to see yourself as odd or weird. You're going to see yourself as unacceptable. You're going to see yourself as unvalued or devalued. And then because of that, a lot of bad things happen. Well, suicide is one of the bad things that happen to these kids. You know, if you are labeled LGBTQ, you're more likely to commit suicide, or attempt it anyway. 4.34 times more likely, four times more likely to attempt suicide than the average teenage boy or girl. Now that's an interesting statistic. In other words, suicide is very much on the mind and very much in the optional category to life for these kids. So that's attempted suicide. 4.3 times more likely to attempt. Well, we know that about half of them succeed in their attempts to commit suicide. Maybe a little less than half, maybe more like 40%. So we have about a 15% population of suicide kids out there. Now, if it's that way it is, those that have seriously considered it, only seriously considered it, that's a little step below attempting. 40% of these kids, 40% give serious consideration to suicide. 35% of them plan suicide. And 25 admit to having attempted suicide in the past year, compared to 6% of the heterosexual or normal teenagers. So we have a high population of kids that are at risk, kids that themselves see themselves at risk and feel and see themselves as not having value in their teenage community or their teenage culture. So they take matters in their own hands and begin this process of suicidal thinking and planning and attempting. And it gets down to about 15% of the population that actually do commit suicide and succeed at it. Now, that's tragedy. That's tragedy. Now, here are some of the issues that I think it's important just to throw into the discussion of this, okay? You know, homosexuality and gay lifestyle, lesbian lifestyle, has been with us all through history. You know, we haven't had the suicide rate. They don't commit suicide, but we have had that problem, if you will, or that lifestyle by choice all through history. The Bible clearly speaks of it in the Old Testament. So that's the time before Christ, and clearly speaks of it in the New Testament, the time since Christ, all the way up to we have the very clear and pronounced account of such a lifestyle by Augustine. So, you know, we've had this all along the way, but we haven't had the suicide element of it all along the way. So there's a difference here. In other words, what's the difference? Well, it's only been about the last 10 years that the suicide rate among these kids has escalated. Now, that's political. That's been a political issue. And those people who advocate for this particular population to be identified and set aside have blood on their hands. They are the ones that have promoted a separate classification of these kids. And when you separate a kid into a subcategory, you devalue that child. This is the same thing that goes on in the racial world today. When we separate people out by race and then ascribe certain characteristics to them, we devalue them. And nobody wants that. Well, these kids don't want it either, but we've done that. Our political system has done that. Our educational system has done that. Our religious system has done that to our kids. Think of all the ministers and priests that have advocated for this subpopulation of kids, to put them aside and call them LGBTQ. Not call them Johnny, not call them Susie, not call them a typical teenager. Just call them that derogatory label, LGBTQ. Our church is guilty. Our political system is guilty. Our educational system is guilty. Principals, superintendents, teachers, counselors, school psychologists, social workers, many of our medical people, many of our professional people in different fields of social work and so on, are guilty for the death of these kids because they have put them in a separate category and devalued these kids. Now, we got to stop that. You have to see a child as a child, a teenager as a teenager, an American as an American. We have to stop this subcategorizing people. Because when you subcategorize any group of people on any terms, you're devaluing them. You're making them different from somebody else. You're not including, you're excluding. And that creates a sense of unwantedness or unappreciation on the part of those people and those kids. You know, it isn't just a matter of sexuality. You know, kids throughout history have had confusion regarding their intelligence. Am I smart or am I dumb? Am I capable or am I not capable? And what's wrong with me? Why can't I learn? Well, kids have always been questioning their intellectual ability, but they don't commit suicide. That's not a suicide group. And we also have kids that question their faith. Am I Christian or not? Am I born of God or not? Am I evil or am I good? You know, do I exist for a purpose or not? Was I created or was I just brought about in some kind of a natural process? We've always had questions related to faith and values. But these kids don't commit suicide. They talk about it. They discuss it. Some become part of the church, some don't. Some become part of a subgroup of religious organizations, and some don't. But suicide is not usually part of that process. Some of these kids are socially questionable, socially confused. You know, they're shy, anxious, and have social anxiety, and have difficulty relating to people. And that creates a sense of unwantedness or a discomfort on the part of many kids. But suicide is not part of the kids that fall into that category. That's not suicide. Sure, they live their life, and some live it well, some don't live it quite as well. But that's not a suicide group of people. The suicide population is what we call the LGBTQ teenager. That stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and questioning youth. And that's what you really want to focus on, is the Q part of it. The questioning youth. We've always had questioning youth. Youth are encouraged to question. Youth are taught how to question. Youth are probed and encouraged to open up their minds and to question things. That's part of teenage life. That's part of the world that we live in. That's part of intellectual stimulation. That's part of creativity. That's part of achievement. That's part of productivity, is to question. Good things come from questioning. But when it's wrapped around this issue of LGBTQ, the questioning becomes part of a disorder or part of something that's unwanted, part of something that's devalued, something that is different, something that is unappreciated. And a kid gets the point of view that he is, or she is, an unwanted child, an unappreciated child, a devalued child, if you will. It's terrible. To label kids is terrible. Labeling of all kinds create difficulty, create conflict, create distress within the child. Now, in regards to sexuality, it's important to know this, okay? And that is the idea that we have a population of kids who grow up and their brain develops at about the same rate, all kids, from birth to age 25. That's the time when the brain kind of maxes out in its development. And then thereafter, the brain stabilizes, and then, of course, in older age, it deteriorates. So we cannot put a child into some classification of his sexuality or whatever, even his intelligence, until 25 years of age. When we do this with young children, we do this with high school kids, junior high school kids, we abuse those kids. It's normal development. And what is normal in the social sexual development of a child is that during the teenage years and junior high years and even the elementary years, a girl relates to the mother, a boy relates to the father. That's how they learn their sexual identity. Then there's a time when the boy relates to the mother better and the girl relates to the father a little bit better. That's how they learn their sexual identity, the difference between men and women. And then they shift back, where a girl now relates to the mother again, and the boy relates to the father again. And sometimes it's two and three times they go back and forth in their identity. That doesn't make them homosexual or anything. That's part of normal sexual development. A child must learn what it's like to be man or woman, what it's like to be boy or girl or male or female. And they learn that by identifying with their family members, primarily the parents, sometimes grandparents, sometimes cousins and aunts and uncles and cousins and friends and teachers and so on. But when we have a culture that's all mixed up on this, we somehow jump to the conclusion, because a child is showing some manifestations of femininity, that therefore he's homosexual. That's far from the truth. Now, here's the second thing. Children are born male or female. A child is male or female. There's nothing in between. There's no alternative. There's nothing different. It's male or female. And we as a culture, we as a family, we as a society, we as a community, encourage the development of that child in its fullness, full sexuality, full intellectualism, you know, full social skills, full cognitive skills. We want that child to be a fully developed person from birth on. If the child happens to be, for whatever reason, born male or born female, that sets the pattern. And the tree grows according to how it's planted. Now, we can have some influence on that tree. We can bend it a little bit to the left, bend it a little bit to the right. But it's still the same tree. And it's still male or female. So that's number one. You have to kind of keep in mind. That's how we're born. But here's the thing about birth. Some children are born with more estrogen. Some children are born with more testosterone. Those with a high degree of testosterone tend to be boys. Those with a high degree of estrogen tend to be girls. But it is also true that there's variations in that. Some girls are born with a little less estrogen and a little bit more testosterone. Some boys are born with a little bit less testosterone and a little bit more estrogen. So they take on characteristics of that particular genetic foundation. A boy with a little bit more estrogen and a little less testosterone might be a little bit effeminate. And likewise for a girl being a little bit more masculine, depending on how that chemical, that biochemical mix occurs within their body. Now, that doesn't make them homosexual, doesn't make them bisexual, doesn't make them lesbian, doesn't make them gay at all, and that's nothing, has nothing to do with it. It only has to do with their physical features and their manifestations of how they present themselves physically and socially in their culture. We create this issue of lesbianism and, say, and gayism. We create that. It's a cultural phenomenon. It's a political phenomenon. And we then classify these kids in that category. Sometimes we doom them to death by classifying them in that particular category. That's a suicide. We doom them to death. And we've done that as a culture. And we have to bear the responsibility for that, and the burden for that, and the guilt for that, and the shame for that. And we need to make ourselves as a society and as a culture, we need to correct that. Accept all for who they are, for how they were born and how they started out life, and let them develop fully. Now, one of the men that has really studied this matter, probably more than most, is Dr. Jones from Wheaton College, Wheaton, Illinois. And he's done a YouTube on this particular topic, and you can access it. He has studied thoroughly the genetic basis of sexuality. And when he gets all through, going through an hour's worth of outlining all the data and all the results of research, there is no evidence of a genetic basis for gayism, for lesbianism. You know, it's a learned behavior. It's a chosen behavior. It's a choice behavior. It's an acquired behavior. And we all as a society contribute, you know, to that choice, to that learning, to that decision that somebody makes. Sometimes it's the child, sometimes it's the parent that makes that decision for them, telling them what they are. Now, what really is needed, if we're going to study this thing, and I've read the research on this one too, is what we call the monozygotic studies, twin studies. Two children are born from the same egg. That's monozygotic. Those children at birth are separated. One goes with family A and one goes with family B. And they're raised separately from each other, unbeknownst to each other, in different worlds, in different cultures, in different societies, and so on. And then later on in life, We look them up and we find them. And we count the number of twins where they both are gay, although they were raised separately. And you know what? We don't have evidence of that. Once in a while it takes place, sure. But it's chance. There is no statistical affirmative significant finding to indicate that these kids are biologically determined to be gay or lesbian. But that's the only kind of study that you should look at. If people do research and surveys and count the number of kids and brothers and sisters and so on, that doesn't mean anything at all. You got to find the studies where they were twins born of the same egg, monozygotic, but raised separately. That's the only study that you can look at. And we don't have very many of them. These studies are usually in Sweden and Norway and Denmark and some of the Scandinavian countries because they keep records of this kind of stuff. And people do research looking for those kind of pairs or combinations and see what the outcome is. So for me, this whole issue of LGBTQ is a political bit of nonsense. It's a political abuse. It's a system of abuse of our children. We're telling a lie. We're telling a false hope. We're creating a picture of falseness. If there's any false news, this is it. This is false news. So disregard it all. Unless somebody can show you a series of studies, not one study, but a series of studies of monozygotic twins raised separately, but have a 100% likelihood or finding of being homosexual or heterosexual. That's the study that you have to look at. And we don't have it. It's not in the literature, you know, today. So, hope this helps. Hope this gives you some perspective. It's a disturbing issue. It's a distressing issue. And it's one that nobody really has the full answer. But you know what? It's open for discussion. We need an open discussion. You need to be part of the open discussion. You need to lead the open discussion on this. You need to form the openness of consideration and the opinions of others and help them think it through. If you're in a church and you're in a small group, a study group of some kind, bring it for discussion. If you're in some kind of a social group, a social club of some kind, make it part of your discussion. If you're in a book reading club, read on the topic and discuss it. But you need to be informed. Now remember, the issue is that it's the Q issue in that formula. The questioning kids. These kids need answers. These kids need help. These kids need support. These kids need somebody to help them think it through. They need psychotherapy. They need socialization. They need a family that comes together and opens up the discussion on this topic and helps them think it through and resolve it in their own mind and move forward in their life, you know, successfully. And let's get that suicide rate reversed. Let's no longer believe this lie. Let's no longer go along with this lie that's out there. Let's tackle it and deal with it, okay? Hey, nice to have you with me today. This is the podcast of Dr. Hedberg, but here's the deal. My book, Dr. Teach Me to Parent, has a chapter on this topic of heterosexual development, the normal psychosocial development of children. So get a hold of my book as a starting point for you. There's one chapter devoted to it. But there are other chapters that may be helpful to you as a parent in dealing with your children as they come into these teenage years. So I recommend my book to you, Dr. Teach Me to Parent. Go to my website, booksbyhedberg.com, and you can pick it up there. Or go to Amazon, and you can pick it up there. Okay? Bye for now.